Today in the executive suite, we continue our series of examinations of our federal CIO, federal CXO surveys. And today it is the CIO survey with the deputy CIO at the Department of Defense, Rob Carey, in studio with me. It's good to see you, Rob. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. And my colleague Jason Miller here joining me in the questioning as always.
This is the best one.
I told Rob before you got into the studio and before we went on the air that this is your favorite of the entire series of all the CXO surveys that we do. You like the CIO survey the best for whatever reason.
Because I get to interview a CIO every week on my show, Ask the CIO Thursdays at 10:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. But that's not just the only reason why.
And you're also becoming the king of shameless plugs, and I appreciate that. Rob, let's start by just talking about some of the things that you're working on and what's on your plate at DOD before we get into the survey today.
Well, there's a ton, and I would like to start with the roles ever-changing. You know, our role from when the Clinger-Cohen Act was created and written in 1996 to now is a millennia of changes in the IT space. And so we've sort of gone from creating single stovepipe solutions to solving emerging mission problems of our departments and agencies to now trying to create a holistic enterprise approach at tackling mission problems. And, you know, we're a big place, the Department of Defense. And so one of the things we're working on is consolidating the network infrastructure at DOD into a more homogeneous state that allows us to better defend and access the information and make it more affordable. And that effort is called the Joint Information Environment. So that's really the big thing we're working on, adding security, adding simplicity to enable information access.
My colleague Jared Serbu has been covering that as you've been rolling it out and talking about it. And I did something funny before we went on the air. I went to federalnewsradio.com and I typed Rob Carey and all the stories about
blank.
You that, no, it was actually very quickly populated with a ton of stories. So if somebody wants to read more about the JIE, they can go to federalnewsradio.com and dig that up.
So one of the things you brought up regarding JIE is two things I want to hit upon. One, we hear this a lot, a homogeneous state of a network. And I think, you know, if people think of homogeneous, it's all the same. But that's not quite what you mean, that everything's got to be, it's not proprietary the same. It's a standard same. Let's delve into that a little bit.
So I like to describe it in two forms, a single security architecture and a single network transport architecture. So what I mean by that is we've set up a lot of environments. You've heard the term in the past, we have 15,000 networks. We really don't have 15,000 networks. We have 15,000 enclaves within the network infrastructure. Why is that? Because people define the edges of who they wanted to talk to without any permissions from those who would have to have permissions to come in all over the Department of Defense. So you could define that as a network unto itself, but it's really not. It's really separated by security layers, firewalls, things like that. So I have security layer upon security layer upon security layer that I need to now try to rid the unnecessary components thereof and set in this single security architecture to a standard, Jason, to your point, at the DOD level, which would allow Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Fourth Estate information to traverse this network far faster, far more simpler, and with my identity attached to it, more secure.
The security piece of it, I imagine, is the most difficult. Is that fair to say?
It is, because everybody has their own thing right now. So to land the plane on a standard that meets the mark for most people is really what we're aiming to do. Aim it at the appropriate level and aim it where the least amount of folks have to actually change and do something different, because change means we're going to spend money and resources to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. One of the issues that you mentioned yourself is that DOD is a large organization. It's very complex. How are you trying to get ahead of the technology curve to be able to manage some of these and make them happen before you're kind of overcome by events in the technology evolution?
Well, the first step is really back to this standard to get to this single security architecture. I do have to get to a simpler baseline. From there, moving forward in a unified manner is easier. Today, with hundreds of baselines across thousands of enclaves, it's very, very challenging to move forward to a single point in the future. So that's why our first step is really execute a standardized network architecture, which then allows me to move forward consistently across the department.
One of the other things I was going to actually go back around to is you talk about becoming more secure more simplistic or more simplicity to the network. And that almost seems opposites. How can you be more secure yet more have more simplicity to the network? But I think you kind of answered it, because once you add that roles and responsibilities to it, that's where, by going to the standards and then adding roles and responsibilities onto data, that's where the security and the simplicity comes in.
Moving to identity-based access and more of a data-centric security model will allow us to be more secure. So the firewalls still play their roles. The intrusion detection systems still play their roles. The boundary conditions that we have at our internet gateways all the way down to desktop, we have a defense in depth in place. I just need to make that less complex but not less effective.
We could go on for the entire hour talking about what you're doing in your job. And in fact, I would encourage you to do that, to come back and be a guest on Pentagon
Happy
Solutions sometime,
that.
And
Happy
we can go get into all this in great detail. Jason, I want to ask you, as you've done in each of these, to lay out some of the demographic information at the beginning of this that we've gotten back on this survey, to give us an idea of exactly who's been responding and to kind of frame the responses that we got.
Sure. The CIO survey, we got about 24 responses out of about 89 or 90. We sent out specifically 89 deputy CIOs and CIOs. So the response rate is actually very high, comparable to most surveys. The breakdown goes like this. 9 were from a cabinet-level agency, deputy, VA, transportation, big agencies. 4 were from large agencies, GSA, EPA, and 11 were from small agencies. From there, we've asked the CIOs or deputy CIOs how long you've been in your position. About 41%, 10 said they've been in their position 4 to 6 years, 9 said 1 to 3 years, and then 4 said more than 6 years. So we have a lot of senior people who've seen a lot of change. And then finally, we asked the career or political appointees, and 19 were career and 4 were politicals.
That's 82% were career employees.
Correct. So that means we have a pretty good, we have people who have been in government again a long time and people who have come in to serve under the Obama administration, so they bring it maybe a different perspective around the CIO stuff. So maybe they were the ones who helped push forward for something like TxDOT or the 25-point plan. But you get a sense of the people who are maybe the brains behind it to some extent, but also the people who've been around a long time have seen the different machinations of the CIO involved. So I think that we have a pretty good cross-section of CIOs and how their answers really give a good glimpse into what the state is.
Rob, you can tell just from that description that he's very excited about this one, can't you?
Well, it's a good cross-section of the cohorts that I have in crime at the national level. There are only a few agencies that would have political appointees in them, and the good thing is you got most of them to respond. that you got 19 career guys. Again, you have a large population, but I would say you got a 25, 26, 27% ratio of responses, which is you have enough data there to now draw some conclusions, which I thought were good. I thought you got we're always a little different in DOD than the this side of the river, but at the same time, we're all working the same general problems.
All right, let's dig into the data when we come back. We'll take a break, and Jason, then you'll have more time to really dig into these issues with Rob Carey, the Deputy CIO at the Department of Defense, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. WFED
Federal News Radio, the DC home of Baltimore Ravens football.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Federal sales professional, meet Brocade Federal. If you're experienced, tenacious, and know how to strategically make your way over brick walls, consider Brocade. Brocade's federal team is expanding at a rapid pace to keep up with the government's growing needs for efficient IT solutions. If you're looking for an opportunity to leverage your technical expertise and customer relationships in a rewarding environment, optimize your career with Brocade Federal. Make the mission-critical decision today and go to Brocade Federal Group on LinkedIn Jobs tab.
The Air Traffic Management Report. Provided by Raytheon.
Did you know that weather accounts for 70% of all air traffic delays in the U.S.? Delivering more information more quickly to air traffic controllers and pilots means significantly reducing the impact of weather on your travel. Raytheon engineers are leveraging more than 60 years of aviation experience to bring more precise weather forecast into the air management arena. That means safer travel and fewer delays in getting to your destination.
Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
To successfully win and deliver on federal and state health IT initiatives, you need to align with the right strategic partners. Tech Systems Government Services offers dedicated healthcare IT teams who provide practical IT services and IT workforce management expertise to integrators in federal, state, and local governments. Each year, Tech Systems deploys nearly 6,000 specialized government and healthcare IT professionals to support the design, development, and implementation of key programs. From integrated eligibility and health exchange programs for state governments to major initiatives inside civilian and military health organizations, Tech Systems enables you to build stronger IT teams and achieve desired mission outcomes. Whether you support HHS, VA, or MHS programs or programs across all 50 states, Tech Systems' national presence and ability to assemble and manage teams of highly qualified health IT talent can help you win and successfully deliver on mission-critical programs. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com. T-E-K Systems.
How safe is the subway? Well, now the feds have to answer that question. I'm Emily Kopp. On Wednesday's Federal Drive, Federal Transit Administrator Peter Rogoff discusses the new law that makes the safety of subways, buses, and commuter rail his responsibility. And what are the courts saying about the 8A program for disadvantaged companies? Well, it all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, reviewing the results of our CIO survey. You can see the survey, the results, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. My colleague Jason Miller here in studio with me. And our guest to talk about the survey results, Rob Carey of the Defense Department.
Now, Rob, before we went to break, we started getting into the cybersecurity conversation a little bit. We talked about identity management, roles and responsibilities. One of the things in the survey, we asked a couple cyber questions. One, let me start with, was the, do you think Congress will, A, pass a comprehensive cyber bill, B, pass only non-controversial cyber-related bills such as FISMA updates, C, not pass any bills or not sure. And one person had a lot of confidence that they would pass a comprehensive cyber bill. 12 said they would likely pass non-controversial such as FISMA updates, and 37%, 38%, or 9 people said they're not going to pass any bills. Obviously, it's an area that I think there's central agreement on that something needs to be done. The question is, will it happen? Won't it happen? Is this something that you in the, within the DoD, how closely are you following what Congress is doing around these cyber bills?
Very closely. So I think when your survey was out, it was a little
August.
So at that time, you probably those responses were good at that time. And now, in the last couple of days, you've seen a resurgence of promises of activity. So let me just answer your question by, I think something needs done. I think that there's an activity and action that's required to bring about the necessary change to improve national security via cybersecurity protections. I think it has a direct correlation to the economy. I think it has a direct correlation to national security. Now, what the form of that will manifest itself in being, I don't know. I would never want to get into the Congress's head and try to write language for them. But we're keenly interested in the outcomes so that we can understand how the Department of Defense can best support that law when it does, when and if it does come about.
Was there a reaction within the department to the Secretary Panetta's speech from last week around cyber? I mean, that was a pretty major speech he made. And a lot of people would say, well, I didn't really hear anything new into it. But I think, as was pointed out, two things are key. One, he made it. First secretary to make a major policy speech around cyber. And two, I think, by the way, he put things together was different than what maybe has been presented before. What was the reaction from people in your office, people in the DOD?
So we're thrilled that he gave a speech on a topic near and dear to our heart to rally the support for such an important area that needs attention. The fact that he gave it was awesome. The fact that he understands it, and that again is no easy feat. 5 years ago, for example, senior leaders weren't necessarily too terribly concerned about this IT, cyber. Tell me again, what's that about? Now it is in their lexicon. It is buried in their lexicon. They understand it. They grasp it. They understand its implications and what it means to the mission of the Department of Defense. So I think what the Secretary pushed out there was a wonderful compilation of the ramifications of now what's going on, the here and now, and try to drive a sense of urgency around what's happening.
That's remarkable to me because it strikes me that when you think about land, sea, air, space, I don't think we've gone from a circumstance where, as you say, senior leadership was just learning about the domain to it being established as its own domain in that short a period of time. Is that fair to say, do you think?
I would say perhaps. I think that it has been a relatively short cycle time to realize that our communications infrastructure and our ability to affect our mission, whether it be warfighting, kinetics, you know, things that go boom, or just a humanitarian assistance mission, is heavily reliant, if not fully dependent, upon communications abilities. So now they have to be trusted communications capabilities. So the fact that now we've knitted the two together into how we do our mission is fully dependent upon this thing called cyberspace, and that we have to be able to operate with impunity in this domain called cyberspace is now a good thing. It's not taken for granted that, yeah, I just can make internet communications or I can make radio communications. It'll just happen. The fact that we understand it and we're treating it as a domain is good.
One of the questions that surprised me regarding cyber in our survey is I thought it would show up as far and away issue one in response to the question, the issues that keep me awake the most at night are, but changes to my budget was number one in that area, 45% of our respondents compared to 37% for cybersecurity. Any surprise there in your part?
A little bit, but again, because I can tell you my response was cyber.
Uh-huh.
Probably followed closely by changes to my budget. But I think people realize that they're trying to run their information machine for their department and agency. And cybersecurity unto itself, if you're not working at that, some of the other stuff might not matter. So I viewed it as, if you're not getting that right, then you may not be worrying about the right stuff. But if you're doing a completely unclassified agency-based IT role for the government here, your main concern might just, in fact, be resources.
And it's interesting because we got a couple interesting comments from that question. As people answered, we asked them for comments. One person wrote, cybersecurity is a hot issue, but it's linked to my budget. No funding to meet all these unfunded cyber requirements. So that's why I think that person decided to put the budget top versus cyber. The other person says, racing to consolidate and streamline so we do not have something that impacts customer service. Interesting that they looked at the streamlining and consolidation versus cyber, because if you get hacked or if you get a denial of service attack, well, your customer service is really going to be impacted. And then the third person, which I thought was one of my favorites, what keeps them awake at night? Their grandchildren. So, but actually they said, none of these work challenges keep me awake. If you're asking which possesses the greatest risk to our agency or to the nation, it is cybersecurity. So I think they were just kind of making fun of the way we asked that question.
Who wrote those questions, by the way?
Francis Rose. Oh. At Francis Rose. At Froze. But let me ask you about that. I mean, when you talk about cyber and how it's linked to the budget, a lot of people kind of talk about, well, you know, we don't have the money or the money's not there. We have to find the money. And that kind of leads to the idea of continuous monitoring, which is a big administration mandate to install the continuous monitoring. is DOD with a huge budget, but with a lot of those 15,000 enclaves, as you talked about, where are you guys at in terms of ensuring there's funding, there's resources for cybersecurity as it relates to as budgets get cut?
So through the budget process, both last year and this year, the cybersecurity budget, which I think was $3.4-ish billion, was reasonably stable, ergo in an era when other budgets came down and it remained stable, one might say it actually rose in importance. And I think that's the way I look at it. That being said, moving to things like continuous monitoring and more automation in the detection and resolution of network anomalies is where we're headed. Being able to manage the plethora of attacks that we face at network speed is really the kinds of things we're trying to aim at so that we use money more judiciously. This isn't anymore in this 21st century information age. We cannot just put people at the problem. It's not about manning up people in front of computers. It's about having tools doing the work of many folks and resolving the issues at net speed. And it's the only way you can stay ahead of these threats. So you have to move from signature-based detection to non-signature-based detection. So you have both working. In addition, you will move to identity-based access to data, right, vice identity-based access to the network. Once I'm on the network, I can get to a lot of things. So the combination of the shift of focus here is really important, and we believe will raise the security boundaries and security layers of the network.
One of the other issues that we asked a lot of questions about, in fact, Jason and I were just talking in the newsroom yesterday, it seems like every time we turn around, we're hearing now something about shared services. We have some questions about that in our survey, and I want to ask you some of your thoughts about that when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today, along with my colleague Jason Miller, is Rob Carey of the Defense Department. You can see all the results of our CIO survey that we're talking about today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and our conversation continues in just a moment.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Anyone can join State Department Federal Credit Union and take advantage of their Visa Platinum credit card. Just a 6.99% APR, plus earn one reward point for every dollar you spend. And there is no foreign transaction or balance transfer fees. Visit sdfcu.org. Annual percentage rate is based on evaluation of applicants' credit. SDFCU is federally insured by the NCUA.
This is John Gilroy from Armature and host of Federal Tech Talk. After almost 300 interviews, I've had many guests who talk about cutting-edge technology and agile software development. How would you like to be part of a fast-paced team with an agile approach to projects? We need talent. We seek experts in .NET, WCF, jQuery, and HTML5. Take advantage of this opportunity where you can make a difference. For more information, go to armaturecorp.com or send your resume to radiojobs@armaturecorp.com.
If agencies can't represent real-world conditions as they develop and test applications, how can they avoid technical issues, delays, and overruns? CA Technologies has the solution. Service virtualization captures and simulates system behavior, data, and performance, creating an unconstrained development and testing environment so agencies can find issues sooner, deliver software faster, eliminate vulnerabilities, and cut costs. Find out how CA Technologies helps your agency accelerate, transform, and secure IT at ca.com/public sector.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Breast Cancer and Sleep. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. A study links a lack of sleep with more aggressive breast cancer at University Hospital's Case Medical Center in Cleveland. Cheryl Thompson saw that in data on 101 women with breast cancer who were asked about their average sleep hours.
Women who reported on average before diagnosis fewer hours of sleep per night had a higher likelihood of recurrence, so therefore a more aggressive breast tumor.
These more dangerous tumors were more common among women who reported 6 hours or less of sleep per night. Thompson says more data are needed to discover what accounts for the association, but she says 7 to 8 hours of sleep should still be a good thing. The study in the journal Breast Cancer Research and Treatment was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Pending legislation, federal budget cuts, contracting efficiencies, contract management best practices, acquisition trends, and the relationship of government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 31st Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Hear from Ted Leonsis, CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Frank Kendall, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and General George Casey, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Learn more at ncmahq.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller and I talking to Rob Carey of the Defense Department about our CIO survey, the results posted now at federalnewsradio.com. And Jason, I mentioned before the break that we asked a couple of questions about shared services in this survey.
Well, we asked about, because there was a couple introduction of a couple things, shared services strategy, digital government strategy, the portfolio stat, and we asked CIOs, how has that changed your priorities over the last 6 months? And interestingly enough, we was agree or disagree. We said, did these change your priorities? 42% said yes, it has changed my priorities. Well, 58% said it didn't. And in fact, I thought that was fascinating because here we have administration priorities. OMB's pushing it. I'm sure the CIO council meetings are filled with discussions around these areas. Yet we have more than half said, didn't really change much. So either A, they're already down those paths, or B, it's something else. So I don't know what your thoughts are, Rob, in terms of when you saw the question, the answers.
Well, my thoughts were that while shared services is a really powerful way to save money and become more efficient and effective, because you can look up and see if somebody has the same thing you seek, if you will. And we've always been a fan of that inside of DOD, because it's not necessarily where the idea comes from, that it's a good idea and then you can execute and implement. And as a matter of fact, down that path, we have offered and have been accepted to be the CIPRNet PKI shared service provider for guys like DHS and other federal agencies who have secret level networks. Now, we were the ones that have rolled it out, and we have got the infrastructure to help. So it was sort of an obvious choice that we would help those agencies that didn't already have it provide this capability for that level of sensitive information, and allow identity to be a cryptologic access token, vetted through a cryptologic access token, so we could then link that sensitive data to identities, and then have them not invent an infrastructure themselves.
Let me ask you about that, because that's something that the DOD has been doing for a little while. You've talked about it before. DISA's talked about it in terms of putting PKI and logical access to the CIPRNet. Are you guys going to be providing services, or what are you going to be providing for the civilian agencies with the classified networks? Are you able to talk about it, or is it classified?
It's not classified. I mean, these are all part of the post-WikiLeaks reforms that we're working on and the executive order to that effect. But we're really trying to help make sure that the networks are secure and that we've actually raised the bar for what's called the secret fabric. So whoever is the producer of the network, and then allowing logical access through PKI to be affected on those networks. So we'll provide the services and the tokens if they want, or just the tokens if they want. It depends on the agency's desires.
Thinking about shared services more broadly, is it fair to say that it is more difficult, in, given the DOD culture, to participate in shared services with civilian agencies? And if so, well, either if so or if not, why is that?
Well, I don't think it's difficult as much as does the service fit inside the business processes? Remember, we all execute missions, and we have a culture and a fabric of how every agency does its work. That being said, a service developed by Agency X may or may not be applicable to Agency Y because it would cost a lot to insert it. So I think you find happenstance where, hey, I need this and somebody else has already built it. Can I import that? Most of the federal agencies will share what they have built and paid for. We've done it with certainly DHS, VA, Commerce, Energy. There's a lot of sharing that goes on where it can be fit without too much energy. If I have to spend a lot of time and energy fitting it, do I want to do that?
And you potentially lose the benefit of whatever cost savings you might achieve.
You have to think through that benefit and then decide if that business case still warrants pursuing it.
But it's got to be cheaper to take something that's already been built and make it fit versus build your own.
That's correct.
It's got to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But if the thing that was built doesn't fit, right? Is it sort of like, do you have to fit the, you have to really jam the key in the lock and really lean on a certain way to get it to turn, or can I just put it in smoothly and have it turn?
But I don't think anyone's going to say if you built something in Windows, you wrote it in Java, and all of a sudden you have a Unix, and Java and Unix don't shake hands well, you're not going to force that in. But if you wrote something in Java and you have a Windows NT, for instance, environment, and it takes a little bit of customization, you know, the 80-20 rule.
Again, it's all about thinking through what you're trying to get done, mm-hmm. inserting it into your business process, decide how much you're going to have to – how much energy do you have to expend to have this shared service fit in your world, and is it worth it, right? I mean, it's very simple. It's not just – don't just take it because it's there. Take it because it fits.
So let's move on to – let's talk a little bit – let's get into more details about shared services, because one of the things that is going across DOD is obviously the enterprise-wide email that DISA is offering, Army is using. There's – you know, I've had great conversations recently both with Ms. Takai, your boss, the DOD CIO, as well as General Basila from the Air Force CIO, who said, you know, the Air Force is next with the email as a service in the cloud. Yet when you talk to General Basila, he says, oh, yeah, we're next eventually. When we get there, we have to finish the AFNET migration first, which is the big Air Force network migration. That seems to be part of this conversation. How does it fit? And we're not sure how it fits yet versus this just makes better sense and we need to make sure it works. I mean, do you see the difference I'm getting to?
I do. And there is a plan to roll out the enterprise email that both DISA, the Joint Staff, and Army have embarked on. And I want to say we're over 550,000 seats have deployed. It runs very well. They have hit the edge of engineering limits of some of the tools that they're using. But that being said, the business case and the benefits of it work because the networks are ready to embrace it. So you got to be really careful that does Mike Basila and the Air Force need to do some consolidation, stratification, standardization before they bring this in? The answer is yes. If he doesn't clean up his server farms of directory services first, we create a different problem. So there is a timing sequence to the embracing of enterprise services, whether it's at the federal level or it's within DOD.
You have layers and layers of legacy stuff wherever you turn, don't you, it sounds like?
I would say that we're a culture – yes. So to answer your question, Francis, yes. We are a culture of building solutions over 25 years, and so we're now trying to get to the place where we're acting like an enterprise with a big capital E and make use of shared services while not compromising mission. Remember, these legacy systems still run this department. So as we transition over to enterprise services and acting like an enterprise, we have to still run the department. So it is a delicate, I wouldn't say complex process, but it's a delicate transition from legacy to the new system while making sure nothing falls on the floor.
You're listening to Rob Carey, our conversation about our CIO survey that's available now at federalnewsradio.com. My colleague Jason Miller and I will continue the conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is In Depth with Francis Rose.
To Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. With no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month for burglary, fire, and medical monitoring, I made the switch to Ackerman Security. Now I'm saving $25 a month. That's over $300 a year. On top of saving money, I feel more safe. Ackerman has one of the few monitoring centers that is both UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified, so I know the most highly qualified operators are responding to my emergency.
Keeping your family and home safe and secure doesn't have to break the bank. Call today and get 2 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com. That's AckermanSecurity.com.
Beth Ann Telford found out 7 years ago she had brain cancer. Her doctors told her she would never run again. But now, Telford is defying the odds. The government printing office employee recently competed in the Ironman World Championship, which includes swimming, biking, and running a marathon. What motivates Telford to keep moving forward, and how did she finish the race? Federal News Radio goes behind the scenes with Telford at a recent training session. Watch the video at federalnewsradio.com. Search Ironman.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
David Wineland is the physicist at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. He's gained worldwide renown in quantum mechanics. What does an atom look like?
If we shine laser light on the atom, we actually can see it. There's certain of these atoms that they will reflect the light at colors that you can see with your eye. So it's actually possible to see a single atom when we put it in this trap, and it looks like a faint star.
FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller and I talking to Rob Carey of the Department of Defense about the results of our Chief Information Officer Survey, and you can find the questions that we asked, the results that we got at federalnewsradio.com. One of the questions, Rob, that we asked was about cloud computing, and we essentially asked it straight out. What benefits are you seeing from cloud computing? Now, respondents could choose any of these answers. The number one answer, 58%, said my agency's saving money. The second response was 41%, my agency's getting better service. The number three most popular answer, my agency's more secure by using the cloud. 25% selected that. And the fourth most popular answer was my agency's not seeing any benefits yet, and that was 20%. That answer to me seems to preclude all of the other ones because the other ones all seem to imply some benefit or other. Any surprises, analysis, thoughts about those results, and how does it compare to what you're seeing and, or working on at DOD?
So we're working on pilots and scratching at cloud as much as we are implementing it. We produced a cloud strategy this summer, which really tells us, told our department that we've got to work out the security paradigm, and then we'll jump into the cloud full-fledged. So I'm not surprised that they're seeing savings, but it is all how you implement cloud. So I would expect that the biggest benefit would be access. That I could afford the teleworker, the mobile worker, access to information when he or she needed it at an acceptable level of security, right? Because security is really a game of risk management. And so if you have that sorted out, you should be able to then derive some savings from the fact that you've virtualized your computing environment. Hopefully you've standardized it because you don't want to have – we don't want to go from our 1,500 data centers to 1,500 clouds. I need to get to the place where there's a consistent computing infrastructure which will enable a cloud inside .mil to be accessible to our workforce from wherever they are with whatever device they have. So they set the time and place of access based on identity, which is what we think cloud enables.
What define maybe a little bit more precisely for me the term acceptable level of security? That can vary, I imagine, in any number of different ways inside DOD.
Well, so the information that is what used to be called FOUO, now controlled unclassified information, sensitive but unclassified, demands a certain set of security controls as laid out by the NIST publication, which we have embraced in DOD. So the 853 and our 8500 are conjoined publications. The standards are the same. So, and I won't rattle off those controls because it's a really long document. But nevertheless, there is a space that you now can say, I have to be able to afford this kind of protections to this information as it runs around in and amongst this environment called the cloud. Once we do that, because you're now sharing servers and capacity, that's where your cost savings comes from. I can then afford access better because I'm enabling access to this information from wherever I may be. And we're adopting the commercial models of cloud computing inside our own world first, and then we'll figure out how we can embrace it in the public side. But I think it provides us this opportunity to really become more streamlined than we are. But if we don't do this consistently, we'll go down a path of expense.
Or just what you've kind of gone through over the last 25 years, which is not necessarily silos, but everyone kind of does their own thing, and then you have 15,000
enclaves. Which is why we enjoy and we believe FedRAMP is a good idea. There is a set of controlled entree points into cloud computing. So the problem set is defined. The set of controls is defined. Is that applicable to you, yes or no? If it is, good. Now we know what that is. Because you really just can't jump into this quarry called cloud. You really need to understand where you're going and approach it with a plan. Absent the plan, you will bring expense to your department, not a savings and not the access you desire.
You said expense. I'll term it chaos. How about that? One of the things around that idea of standards. You talked about the cloud strategy, but Ms. Takai, the DoD CIO, recently signed off on a data center architecture of sorts. Can you describe what that is and what that is, how that's going to add to that standards that we talk about? Because everything we've been talking about, the shared services, a lot of the efforts to move to the joint JIE, Joint Information
Environment.
Thank you. I was thinking exchange for some reason. A lot of it is dependent on a cloud infrastructure, whether you call it a cloud or not. I think that's what we are basically getting to or toward.
So as we move towards JIE and we move to consolidate and standardize our computational infrastructure or communications infrastructure, the standard that we want, the reference architecture is what Terry just approved. The reference architecture for those core data centers is what we have now defined. So today you could say it's a DISA DEC. It could be an Army data center at Fort Huachuca. It could be a Navy data center at SPAWAR San Diego. If we define this standardized architecture, they can then, through their tech refresh process, grow their data center into the standard. And we're working now to define those data centers which will stay on as flagship data centers in Department of Defense that will meet this reference architecture. This will allow us to then create, again, a homogeneous computing environment, a computing backbone that, in essence, begins to knit together a logical cloud inside .mil.
That's Rob Carey. He's the Deputy Chief Information Officer at the Department of Defense. Our guest today, my colleague Jason Miller and I, talking with him about the results of our Chief Information Officer survey. And we'll wrap up our conversation next on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
Some big changes in the way the Defense Department will do conferences. Deputy Defense Secretary Ashton Carter says any conference with a budget bigger than $500,000 will need approval from the secretary or undersecretary of the component that wants to do the event. Carter also says no more motivational speakers, musical entertainment, or promotional items at DOD-sponsored conferences. The guidance is similar to an Office of Management and Budget memo for civilian agencies back in May.
What is the power of ingenuity? It's turning night into day through image intensification and sensor fusion. It's night vision goggles for military and civilian pilots. It's how warfighters, Homeland Security, and police own the night. It's iAware, combining sensor-fused night vision with imagery, GPS, and other data. And it all comes from ITT Excellus, the world leader in night vision. Visit exelisinc.com. That's exelisinc.com. Excellus, the power of ingenuity.
The Air Traffic Management Report, provided by Raytheon.
Did you know that weather accounts for 70% of all air traffic delays in the U.S.? Delivering more information more quickly to air traffic controllers and pilots means significantly reducing the impact of weather on your travel. Raytheon engineers are leveraging more than 60 years of aviation experience to bring more precise weather forecast into the air management arena. That means safer travel and fewer delays in getting to your destination.
Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Dan Doherty, Vice President of EMC Federal, discusses the benefits of telework.
Government agencies are adopting telework to improve productivity, save money, and attract new talent. The success of these programs is often determined by the quality of the design and the strength of the virtual infrastructure. EMC knows telework. With our partners Citrix and VMware, EMC has the reference architectures and the past performance to execute your telework projects with complete confidence.
Learn more at emc.com.
Really? One website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
It's about time. Why didn't I think of that?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live events versus webcasts, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
Seriously? I can't believe I haven't heard of the site before. What is it again?
It's GovEvents.com, the best place to find government events that matter to you, near you.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller and I talking to Rob Carey of the Defense Department about the results of our Chief Information Officer survey. You can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. There's a lot of material in here, Rob, that we're not going to have a chance to talk about. So I'm curious if there was anything that you noticed as you looked at the results that really jumped out at you, was a wow moment for you.
So I would say not really, because I'd say I've been around a long time, but I know the results that – I know how I answered the questions, and did my results differ from the general results? And in some cases, yes, some cases, no. But again, the things that are of great importance to the public sector, different from the defense sector, are known to me. So again, I'm not surprised by them. There's much more of a financial focus, of a customer service focus to the taxpayer. Our constituents are our service members. So they're and the taxpayer as well, but there many of our systems really face inside. They don't face outside. They help the warfighter conduct his or her mission. They're not helping John Q. Public perform something on behalf of John Q. Public.
One of the things that I hear all the time when it comes to discussions with both current and former CIOs and deputy CIOs across government, civilian and military, is the concept of the CIO finally starting to gain a seat at the table when it comes to the discussions in the C-suite and so on. You made a comment earlier in the program that I thought was really interesting about Secretary Panetta's speech, where it wasn't very long ago that it was something, cybersecurity was something that was not really on the radar screen of the people at the very highest levels of the agency. And I wonder if that doesn't apply more broadly to the technology shop at DOD and other agencies, and whether you're seeing a transformation where the CIO is where you feel that you and Ms. Takai are more, maybe more tightly woven into the leadership of the agency because of how pervasive technology is.
So I think that we are certainly part of the fabric of the mission, right? People understand, like, hey, this network is carrying the mission communications on its back and has to be up and running and providing the service. I would tell you at the federal level, my experience with the Federal CIO Council and my counterparts in the civilian sector, The CIO is the cyber guy today because he or she was the IT guy. Now the lexicon is about cyber. So now there's a slightly different role set, but nevertheless, it is basically the same and is the logical choice to invest the energy to say, okay, CIO, I need you to make sure this kind of stuff, my systems are up and running and performing their function, that the network is up and running to allow the systems to perform their functions.
All right. So as we look forward then, is it fair to say that as that arc continues, that we might see the CIO and the deputy CIO shift into more of a communications/connections guy as the mobile revolution continues to evolve and so on?
Well, I think we already are at that point. I think that you are about, and remember, it is Chief Information Officer. We are about moving information to where it's needed to render a decision in a timely manner that is reasonably secure and meets mission.
Rob, I would love to hold you to your agreement to come and be on Pentagon Solutions and talk about this stuff more in depth as it relates to the Pentagon. Thank you very much, Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. Great job on this survey.
Next time, 2 hours.
That's fine with me. We just have to work it out with Mr. Kerry and the folks at the Pentagon.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you very much for coming
welcome.
On today.
Thanks
All the
me.
Results for our survey are posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And our CIO surveys are also available there for our CXO surveys are also available there for the performance improvement officers, for the chief acquisition officers, and for the other surveys that we've done. They're all there on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And our number 2 of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.